Well, we'll start just for the purposes of the cassette to help our transcriptionist. Let each of you state your name, when you were born, and where you were born. And then after everyone's done that, then we can start telling stories. So, who else let you start?
I was born December the 5th, 1911, in just over the Custer County. Well, it was just south of Dewey County, about 3 miles. It was 18 miles northwest of Custer, exactly. And I was the fifth of 8 children.
Oh, goodness, big family.
Now, is there anything else you'll...
You don't have to do anything else right now.
Your name.
Oh, your name, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, Fern Graft Crispin, G-R-A-F-T.
Okay, I'm Margie Burton Jones. I was born 4.5 miles south of Lenora, Oklahoma, in Dewey County. I've never lived outside Dewey County. And I was around in the Dust Bowl days, but not as much as some of these other gals.
You were born in 23, isn't it?
Uh-huh. 4/21/23.
Just had a birthday.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Okay, ready for you. State your name so we know who you are.
I'm Sue Hedges, and I'm the daughter of Bessie Cole.
Okay.
And I was born at Putnam, 1943.
Okay. All eyes are on you.
Name?
I'm Bessie Cole.
Bessie McGettrick.
Bessie McGettrick Cole.
When were you born?
I was born at Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Which is south of Lenora.
Which is what?
South of Lenora.
South of Lenora.
February?
February the 19th.
1907.
The baby of 11.
The baby of 11.
My
God. Baby of 11.
The baby of tired parents. Right. Last of the bunch. And you are her
I'm
son.
I'm J.W. Cole. I was born north of Putnam, 1940.
Would you say that you all grew up in a rural area or lived in a rural area?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that does make it a little easier for us to talk about things and compare our experiences.
We probably were all born in a rural area.
Yeah.
You're right.
At a farm home.
Yeah. So what was it like on the farm? What was a typical day? What did you have to do when you got up in the morning?
Well, you milk cows, you brought in cows, put them in the lot, put them in stanchions, and fed hogs, slopped hogs,
fed the calves,
took care of chickens, gathered eggs.
Cooked and heated on wood.
Cooked bread.
Got our own wood, went to the timber and cut our wood. Had heating stoves, cook stoves.
Wood stoves.
Very little indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much.
Yeah. What you brought indoors. Yeah.
No electricity until 46.
And the sand drifted in the outhouse, too.
Oh, me.
Yeah, when you had to sit down, you got sandy. It was everywhere.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how did you cope with just that being everywhere?
Oh. There was no electricity, and we didn't have any sweepers, you know, vacuums or anything. And you'd try to sweep it out with a broom. Well, you'd get a dustpan full, but in the meantime, it all, you know, in sweeping, it'd all go back up again and then settle on the furniture and the floor. and everything was gritty. We had cisterns, but they went dry.
Yeah.
And so then we had to have well water, and it was real hard. And it would cause, I don't know what you call it, but there'd be rims of gyp around it.
Yeah,
the men went to everything. The barn, the women went to the chicken house.
Yeah.
The restrooms.
We raised chickens and we wrung their heads off, and we didn't know it was good for us then, but I can remember we had a wire back of our cob house. Now, you know what a cob house is?
I don't know what a cob house is.
We raised corn. My dad lived in Texas, and his dad died young, and he had to pick cotton. He said if he ever had a farm, he'd never raise a bowl of cotton on it. And so the cobs were what the corn came off of. Mm-hmm. And they shucked the corn and stripped it with some kind of machine. And then they threw the cobs in a cob house, and we used those for kindling. They were real good. They made a good warm fire for a little while. And we called that the cob house. Well, on the back of the cob house, we had a wire hanging up. And Mother was afraid to let us scald the chickens. When we killed one every night for school to take to lunch the next day. And we'd tie the legs to the wire. And then we'd take a knife and start, when we'd just skin them instead of picking them. And they say, now that's much, much better for you, because we didn't know we were healthy then. But they say the skin is the worst part of the chicken that you can eat. And we just skinned it all off.
That chicken tastes good?
Yeah. Oh, we'd fry it, and Mother'd roll it and flour and fry it, and we'd take it to lunch in for our school. We had one every day.
Yeah.
We always raised a lot of fryers and had lots of hens, and we had geese. We did pick them. I hated to have to pick them because they'd bite you under the nose. But we'd put them down, hold them that way, and then we'd pick them and use them for feather beds and pillows and that kind of thing. And then we raised turkeys. And they'd always go off on the creek, so we'd have to go to the creek and hunt the turkey eggs and nests. We had fun. There was eight of us. What one can think of. We started a church one Sunday night. There was about 15 of us on the horses. And we were running the horses, and one of the horses stepped in a prairie dog hole. We used to have lots of prairie dogs. Oh, they were just thick in the pastures. And one of the horses stepped in a prairie dog hole and broke its leg.
Oh, no.
So that stopped us going to church. We had to go back and find someone to come and kill the horse. They didn't have veterinaries then. You couldn't take them to veterinary, so they had to shoot it. And that was something we didn't want to see.
Any of those kind of stories sound familiar to anybody else? Of plucking chickens and ducks and...
Fairly well.
Yeah. What was your least favorite chore?
What was my favorite cuss? Milking cows, feeding hogs.
Hogs were the worst.
Yes, hogs were the worst.
Fortunately, I didn't have to milk. I had four brothers, and they did all the milking, and Mother made us stay in the house and cook, and I used to think, well, it'd be nice to get out and milk.
You'd change your mind after you got out there.
Yeah, that's a great time.
Oh, got switched in the face with a nasty tail.
And it was full of cockleburrs. Boys used to cry about that. You know, like a cockleburr.
I'll kick you over.
Oh, geez.
And then, yeah, I think you changed your mind.
Little old round stool, no bigger than a cup.
Just sit on this stool and go that way.
Yeah.
Tea with both hands.
Then I bet Bessie can tell a lot about butchering hogs.
Yes, I could.
Yeah, I've
done
quite
a lot
a day.
Of that. And rendering lard.
Mm-hmm.
heating
and making soap.
Heating water.
They made soap out of the lard. Cracklings that came out of the thing.
I've still got my soap recipe.
You still make soap?
Nope.
No, that's like real popular to do now. People are like all craftsy when they make soap. I don't think you guys are being craftsy.
Not that old lye soap.
Yeah. Well, so tell us, what was your how? Well, I don't know how. I want to know how you did laundry. That's what I want to know.
Let me tell you. We had a great big black kettle that sat outside. It held probably 40 gallon of water. And when Dad built the house, he was fortunate enough or smart enough that he dug the cisterns, and both the cisterns were on the porch, so we didn't have to go out in the sun to get water. But we had to carry it out from the house out and fill this big old boiler. Well, we put a fire under the boiler, Mother did, and she would then, when it began to boil, she wouldn't let us carry it, afraid we'd get scalded. So she put it in a washing machine. And she had already rubbed the clothes on the rub board in a tub and had them lying out to the side in another tub. And she put those in the washer. Well, Dad had got a motor, a little machine with a motor on it, and you cranked it. And then he had a belt that went crossways, you know, twisted, and he put that around the circle of the washing machine. It had a round handle, round wheel to turn it. And so we didn't have to turn it by hand. And that would turn it, and when it got through, well, then Mother put them back in that pot, and we had to refill it, and she boiled them again. And then rinsed them, and then in clear water, and then we rinsed them in bluing water. Mm-hmm. And then we hung them on the line. Washed them out, wring them out, hung them on the line.
And they smelled good right outside.
How about you? Is that the same way you guys did laundry?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty similar, huh?
Monday morning usually was wash day.
No.
Most of people didn't have a motor.
No.
Yeah.
They had to do it themselves.
Had a stick on it.
It was a moon shape. And you go that way with it.
Huh. You stood in.
What about ironing? Tell us how you'd iron.
Well, we had a
saddle.
A what?
Saddle.
Yeah.
They were heated on the cook stove.
Yeah.
Flat iron.
Three of them. And you had a handle that you stuck into them. And when one of them get cold, you go back and get the other one.
But you got big muscles carrying those big irons.
Plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sure did.
When you were working with the animal, the hogs and the cows, did you ever operate any of the machinery on the farm? Like a tractor or anything like that?
Yes.
Yeah. We've done a lot of that.
Yeah.
Tractors.
Castrating. Dehorning.
She ran the combine, not the tractor.
You're busy.
Yes, I was.
And then helped Daddy with cut the wood. When we had a great, huge old wood pile just west of the house that I've seen Mom and Dad stand in front of a buzzsaw. And run those posts through those big pieces of wood through.
In the wintertime, usually a Sunday evening with buzzsaw. Huh. All the fence material was made out of oak and walnut split, and the lemmings was brought in for the buzzsaw, and that was made into wood.
Wow.
Which was heated and cooked with during the winter.
We've still got lots of post piles.
Yeah.
We put that. Told them, put in arm posts.
Well, I can tell from the way you're talking, you're all pretty busy. But I can't help but think you had time to have some fun once in a while. So what did you do that was fun?
Golly, I don't know if I ever had any fun with mom.
Probably sitting down and not working.
Few minutes to sit down.
Saturday evening was in town, and usually Saturday night was a dance somewhere.
Yeah.
That's really what we always went to is a dance.
I doubt that any of us in here had a dance some.
Yeah.
My grandmother was raised on a plantation in Kentucky. And during the Civil War, her dad sent her to Texas. The Northern troops were getting closer. And they killed her parents and burned the plantation, and she never would go back. But she lived at St. Joe. And when she came to Oklahoma, she wouldn't come until live in a dugout. But her oldest son came. Uncle Dick Graff came in 1892, and he and one of the men lived in the dugout, and he bought a relinquishment. Now, what a relinquishment is someone had settled on the place where that he wanted, and he offered to buy it. And this man had been to the South Canadian River, which was about 8 miles, and he cut cedar logs this big, and he notched them and had them ready to build a log house.
Uh-huh.
And so they took the money. The wife said, take it, I'm tired of this country, let's go. And so they took the money, and Uncle Dick moved on the place, and he and his nephew built this two-room cedar log house. Well, cedar bees would go into it. And on Sunday afternoon, all the neighbors would go up and see Grandma and Uncle Dick, and those cedar bees didn't sting. And we'd get shingles and a baking powder can, and we'd see who could knock down the most of those bees and put in the baking powder can, and who got the most, you know. Those cedar bees, they got so bad that finally they just practically ate that building up. And my brother lived there with Uncle Dick and took care of him during the last. And he never did marry. He stayed with Grandma. And he tore the old thing down and made it into fence posts. But we had lots of fun knocking down the cedaries and eating hackberries.
Yeah.
Did you ever eat any hackberries?
No, I haven't. Oh, I had some gooseberries and some mulberries.
Well, yeah, we had mulberries too. But the hackberries were real tiny. And they had a great big seed in them. All you had was just a hull.
Mulberries and sugar with a Sunday dessert.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What else would be a real treat food? Something you'd have on a special occasion, or if you were really good that day?
Currants was always picked. Yeah. Plums and made into jellies.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What did you like?
Oh, I don't know. I tried to put all them times back behind me.
Yeah. Well, we found talking to people that whenever they talk about things that they ate a lot of, whether it was fried chicken or beans or potatoes or whatever, either to this day they really, really like it or they really, really hate it. So is there anything that you had that you just can't stand?
A lot of it you had to eat it, whether you wanted to or not. And that was mush and meal.
Yeah.
And cornbread meal.
Do you like that now, or is that something you say, no way, I'm not eating that again?
Yes, I like it.
Yeah.
And I like my mush, and I still make it and fry it.
Yeah.
I like it fried.
How about you? What's your favorite thing?
Oh, I really don't know. I still like the same things.
Yeah.
We had to eat everything. I mean, we weren't picky,
yeah,
like kids are today.
A lot of the evening meals were cold mush.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then come morning, it was fried mush.
Yeah.
So. We had biscuits for breakfast every morning. I imagine most of you did. And Mother'd make the biscuits. And then 3 times a week, since it was 8, we had to make light bread. And Dad would make the light bread, or the light bread, and then Mother would put it in the big pot when the biscuits got done and the bacon and stuff that we were having. And my brother about got into real trouble with his mama one time. He wanted some greyhounds. And so Dad told him, well, okay, he could have some. So he had bought a couple of greyhounds. And he called them Jack and Dave. So one day we looked over in the paddock there, and my mother said, oh, my land, the horses are running away. Well, the hounds were chasing a jackrabbit, and he was going along the way. But the worst of that was we always butchered hogs, and we'd butcher 10 or 15. We'd butcher for Dad, for Uncle Dick and them, and they would cure the hams and hang them up in the wash house. And one time those two greyhounds got in the wash house, and they were tied up on the rafters, and they reached up and pulled down two or three hams, and he wasn't very popular.
Does anybody else remember pets that they had around their houses when you were little?
We all had dogs.
Yeah? Do you remember your dogs' names?
The dogs were of a shepherd. They called them shepherd. They really wasn't any breeds. They were just called shepherds, and they were used with the cows.
Yeah.
Everybody had milk cows to bring in twice a day, so usually they had a shepherd dog. Mm-hmm. A lot of people had hounds.
Usually those collie dogs was awful good about helping to take the cattle to another pasture,
yeah,
from one pasture to the other. We had Den had one, and I had one, and one of them would go on one side of the cattle and the other on the other, and of course we'd in the back.
Yeah, heard of
it. And that's the way we put them to the extra pasture.
Mm-hmm. We had a collie, and we called him Rover.
Yeah.
And he'd follow the kids to school. And we have a school picture, and he's sitting upright with the kids at school.
You still have that picture?
Hi.
You still have that picture?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's in the historical book.
Yeah?
We made the two Dewey County historical books. We worked 3 years on those. We got the first one done, and everybody said, oh, make another one. We didn't know what to write. So I taught English, and Woodrow wanted me to proofread all the stories. And the first ones, there were a lot of misspelled words,
yeah,
and Woodrow told me, Woodrow Gore, he was the main one, and he said, try not to change the thought of the story, but to just correct the spelling. And, of course, they'd start out, and they'd just never to have a paragraph or anything, you know, they got that. Because a lot of them didn't have but third and fourth grade educations, you know, and could barely write and read. And, of course, then the second group, most of them had high school educations, and it was much easier to proofread those stories and change them. And, on Sunday afternoons, we had four riding horses for us kids. And then Dad had one, and we couldn't ride his. He wouldn't let us ever,
yeah,
ride his.
Huh.
And we'd all get out, and the neighbors, we had, I don't know if you ever heard of Dr. O'Toole over Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be
Leela.
And she was our neighbor, and we used to play together and have more fun. She went to the rural school where I went to school. I went to her funeral. She never married. They buried her, Thomas, with their parents. And
now, we have a lady that works at Special Collections, Angela McKim. She comes from Nebraska.
Uh-huh.
Her mother, Leela O'Toole, was her mother's aunt.
Oh.
It's
must
connected.
Have been a Williams or Craig. Her mother was a Williams, And then they were, and then one of her, Mrs. Emma O'Toole, that was Leela's mother, and Ed O'Toole was her dad. And he died rather early, and they moved to Thomas so that the kids could go to high school. And then she taught at Hollis and a little while, and then went to Stillwater. And I think she's up Stillwater. She was dean of women. And she went over to, some country over way away. Mm-hmm. And taught the people things. She taught home economics, and she taught the people. But she had, there was one in the family that was the same age as nearly every one of us kids. And we just lived a half mile apart.
And something she said reminded me. Do any of you remember home demonstration agents coming and what kind of things that they were instructing?
Mm-hmm. They used to come. My mother belonged to a home demonstration club a while. And, of course, they taught them kind of how to sew a little. And things that they did back then, but sewing machines, you know, we had a sewing machine, but not a electric, you had to pump them by your foot.
And the pressure cooker, that was really an improvement for people to can food. They had big gardens, and you didn't throw any away.
Yeah.
You saved it all. the home demonstrators.
But do you remember something standing out in when you think about this time period, when you think, okay, things were not so bad, and then after this point in time, things were harder. Do you remember something that sticks out as saying, this is hard times?
Well, I know I used to raise lots of pumpkin and squash, and I'd cut them open and clean them out and wash them and put butter into them and bake them and put salt and pepper on them. They were awful good.
Sounds pretty good.
They're more like eating potatoes.
Yeah.
Sweet potatoes.
Mother cooked on an old wood stove.
Yeah.
And you carried wood, kindling in at night and wood in at night. Because when she got up in the morning, she baked biscuits and made a sauce that was called chocolate gravy.
Yeah.
Like that went on our biscuits.
And what is that?
Chocolate gravy and Dutch honey.
Mm-hmm, it was a cup of sugar and a cup of cream and a cup and a half of milk. And you cooked it until it became a gravy consistency.
Yeah.
And you poured it over your biscuit like a gravy.
I'll send you one. His is cowboys.
Her kids were not great milk drinkers. And she made lots of puddings, lots of stuff with milk.
So you still got the nutrition of it without actually having to drink
it. Well,
I've got a big box of receipts that I've got.
They played cards at night with the neighbors.
Yeah.
She had lots of birthday parties for the kids and the neighbors. We invited the neighbors in. And
even for the kids in school, I'd have birthday parties and let them go outside on the hay rack and eat and fix hamburgers for them. Kids, all the boys anyhow, they sure did like to come to eat.
Probably mom's hardest time in the real early 30s.
Yeah.
Her oldest child, she lost at 31. And at that time, she took care of her mother and her father-in-law, both. So she took care of both of those for the rest of their lives.
Wow. When did you get married?
In 26.
Yeah, and how did you meet your husband?
Oh, at a dance at Fletcher's Lake at Pumpkin.
Right up the road.
Was it love at first sight?
Yep, it was. We always rode horses. We had our own horses we rode.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw him, well, my older sister, me and her run together all the time. And if one had a fella, the other had one. Or we wouldn't go. Or we'd go together.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Bill. He was, he had danced with some big husky woman. I knew her real well, and I didn't like her. I wouldn't mention no name. So when he come off the floor with her, well, I just walked up to him. I said, would you like to dance with a young woman? And he took right in. And I did, too, because he seen me hold my horse back.
That's a great story.
All of their families, there's two brothers married two sisters, and then a brother married a sister.
Oh.
Three sets of double cousins.
When Mom and Dad was married, they lived in just a small two-room house. And Granddad Cole also lived with them. And then later in there, Grandma, her mom, lived with them about the time that Leroy was born. And she and Grandma slept together, and Granddad and Daddy in a room.
Bill's dad had a cot of his own because he was one-legged. Okay. And he slept.
He slept by himself. Oh, with Dutch.
Yeah.
They had some brothers and sisters and daddies, or some brothers of daddies that lived with them.
She lives on a centennial farm.
Do you now?
Her father-in-law was a half-breed Cherokee.
Yeah.
And he lost a leg, and he had his homestead mortgaged. And her dad took it over and paid it off and took care of him and her mother in the 30s.
She also worked for Aunt Road. Go in a little bit.
Anything I could find to do, I done it.
Sounds like it.
I sure did.
Well, do you remember when the dust storm started? Yeah. What do you remember about that?
Well, of course, you know, I wasn't that old to feel like I was responsible for a lot of things. But I know at school one day there was a bad dust storm, and the teacher had us wet cloths, handkerchiefs, or whatever it was, and put around our faces to keep from breathing all this dust. Then I especially remember one Sunday evening when a terrible dust storm came in, and the way the sun was shining, it looked like fire, and I thought to myself, surely this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
It was so terrible.
What did you do?
Went to the cellar.
Yeah.
My daddy was a great hand to go to the cellar. So if it was a storm, we went to the cellar. If we had a dust storm, we went to the cellar.
And if it was the end of the world, you went to the cellar.
It was going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, okay. So, but you know, sometimes when those would come in, they just look like storm clouds. And we'd think, surely we're going to get a rain. And oh, we just thought, oh, that'll be so nice. And then in a little while, that dust began to pour in. We had, we put comforts, tacked them up over the windows because nobody had double windows in. And the old windows rattled, and we'd put, Mother'd put comforts and tack them at the top and bottom so that it'd try to keep out as much as we could. And then we'd get in the one room that had the least windows. And like her, we'd put washcloths over our face and try to keep from breathing any more of the dust. But it came in everywhere. You couldn't keep it out.
we had two porches that were open because no one had air conditioning, and when you had a lot of company, you always did, then people had time to go visit. And we always was having company, and everybody liked my dad. And those porches would just simply be littered with dust, you know. They was outside, and it'd come through the screen. And it'd just be terrible. It'd take a week to get it all out, and then by that time there'd be another one come in.
There's a lot of what they call dust pneumonia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you know people who suffered from dust pneumonia?
I've heard of several, but I don't remember now. Mm-hmm. But it was terrible. Mm-hmm.
It was amazing that more people didn't die, though, from that, because they had to breathe it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I can't ever remember anyone that they considered just dying from that.
Mm-hmm. What about people who left the area because it was hard times and because of the drought and the dust storm? Did you know anyone who left?
You know what they said? They went to California, and it raised the IQ of both states. That was a joke they told.
What were you going to say?
Well, I had some go to Clinton, and my dad's uncle worked on a railroad. Mm-hmm. But... I don't remember how they made it or not.
Her family more or less all went to California, or to the West Coast anyway.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And my dad's family also. So they're about the only two families that stayed in here.
So those people that left, did they stay in California, or did they come back after several years?
No, they more or less stayed.
Yeah.
They hammered it out some way. Yeah. I don't know how.
A few came back, but the majority of them got good jobs and just stayed.
Yeah. Well, whenever the dust storms were approaching, do you remember any sort of signs from animals that might have indicated that there was a storm or that something big was coming?
Well, I don't know if I do.
Your chickens and your hogs and your cows, nothing different?
Well, the chickens went to roost. They thought it was night.
Yeah.
When that storm come in, it was dark, and the chickens would go to roost. And it's like it was night.
What about any sort of travelers that would come through, like tramps that would come through, anyone like that, hobos?
Gypsies.
Tell us about the gypsies.
Oh, gypsies. Mm-hmm. I forgot about them.
Did they come up to your house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and usually we was always in the field working, you know, or something, and they'd come right out in the field, want you to go with them, or want you to talk to them, or...
Hmm. Would you?
No.
No?
Didn't have time fooling.
Of course, while they were talking to you, while they were probably stealing from
you. Yeah, they're trying to get a hold of something, you know.
Hmm. Do you ever know that they stole anything from you guys' place?
No.
No.
We always had rented land, and it was pretty well on the highway where they traveled, you know.
Yeah.
And we had rented land. Or we'd be a pulling cotton for somebody, or pulling broom corn for somebody, or heading capper for some. Just always something for somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
To get a job.
Yeah. Did the gypsies, when they came, were they in cars, or how did they travel?
No, there's usually in covered wagons of some kind. I don't know how they had them covered or not, but They was on the highway, you know, and they'd come down the field where we was. Okay. I don't know just how they could travel. Hmm. But they was always in covered wagons of some kind.
Yeah. Hmm. Does this sound familiar of other encounters with gypsies, same sort of thing?
We live quite a way off the highway, and they never bothered.
Yeah.
We had salesmen.
Yeah? What kind of salesmen? What were they selling?
Oh, steers. Mother called one steer. She had a ferry steer. And this man sold them, but he didn't live too far away. And it was just a great big enamel steer. You could put water with jars in them, you know, if you didn't have to. That's before pressure cookers. And you could put, it had a rack in the bottom, and you could set five or six. It was pretty big. Mother kept it hanging up on the back porch, and we just used it for canning. And we were fortunate. We had a big apple orchard on our farm, and that's the first thing the people nearly did when they come to this country was plant an orchard. And then my dad bought another place over west from some people that left, and they had a big apple orchard. And then he bought another one from another people that left, and they had a big apple orchard. And one time some people came down from Putnam, and I went with them, and they bought 20 bushel of apples for 50 cents a bushel. And we had to shake them off the tree and pick them up, you know. But we had apples, and we had delicious apples. Mm-hmm. And in the fall, Dad would wrap them in paper and put them in a box with a good lid on it. And then he'd set them down in the basement. We had a basement under the one bedroom, and you had to pull the rug back and to open the door. The door was great big. When people came, why, we'd pop corn and get out the apples, and that's everybody just loved those apples, and we ate apples till we felt like an apple because we all liked it. And the kids would go hunting. We'd all get out and go hunting at night. We'd hunt possum. And we tried to avoid skunks.
Yeah. With good reason.
But we'd go possum hunting, and we'd go to those orchards and get us apples to eat and have fun, you know, playing and catching possum.
What did you do with the possum after you caught it?
Oh, usually they turned them loose, but the boys a lot of times skinned them. And how we had one mail carrier, and he wasn't a very happy soul anyway. And those boys would catch those skunks in traps, and they'd skin them, and he'd have to take them on the mail route. They mailed them in to sell, and he wasn't very happy, and I wouldn't have been either. But they'd get, that's the way they got a lot of their spending money. There was lots of skunks and possum, and there were not many. We're beginning to have some now. What are they?
Armadillos? Armadillos?
Oh, we have those. They came up from Texas. We went to Texas one time to visit some relatives, and I said, Carol, those are such pretty ones. Why don't you catch some? We'll bring them back to Oklahoma. And he said, heavens, we don't want those things. We got enough. But they got there anyway. And now we got them everywhere.
Well, back to the traveling salesman for just a minute. Does anybody else remember traveling salesmen and what kind of things that they sold?
Well, they sold liniment, you know, yeah. Watkins, and what else was it?
Do one day.
Anklets and clover leaf salve.
There was Watkins and
the Raleigh man.
Raleigh man, yeah. Uh-huh.
Clover leaf salve?
Mm-hmm.
And what?
Those anklets.
Anklets.
What did you use that for?
What
People back then thought in the spring you had to be cleaned out, so they were a laxative.
Okay.
Everybody got a spring cleaning. But the salesman said there wasn't any doctors, really not much drugstores, so your traveling salesman brought both most of the stuff that they bought.
Yeah. What was the best cure? What was the best thing you could buy? The all-around, all-purpose
pain relief.
Yeah, pain relief. Yeah.
Everybody had pain relief.
Put so many teaspoons in some warm water and drink it.
Turpentine. No, it's another.
Yeah.
My mother really took for turpentine. One of us kids got a cut place. She dabbed some sugar in that and pour full of turpentine. Boy, it set you apart for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It sure did. Wasn't long a healing.
What if you had a cough?
Hinklets? Is that what you're...
Hinklets.
H-I-N-K?
L-E-T-S, I suppose.
Yeah.
My grandmother was a midwife.
Really?
She did a lot of the doctrine until Dr. Lloyd came to Tologa.
Huh.
In the area north and west.
Wow. And what was her name? Grandmother, right?
Susan Busker McGettrick. Huh.
So it would be on your dad's side then, right?
No, your mother's
side.
And mom's mother.
Okay, okay.
She was 4'11", wore a size 4 shoe.
Oh, my goodness.
Tiny.
Yes, she was tiny. But she was mighty.
Yeah.
She'd go with them men to their wives, take care of their babies, take care of their women that was having babies. She went as far as Webb, from Webb on to Margo, taking care of women that was having babies. And then they took her in a wagon. That's the way they had it going, the men. They'd come and get her. But she was just like a doctor. She was really good.
In the summers, there weren't a lot of shoes, so the kids all went barefoot.
Uh-huh.
And if you stepped on a rusty nail or something, well, you got that sugar and turpentine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Took care of the long jump with it.
What were some of the other medical cures? Like if you had, you know, like the flu or something like that, what would you, or a fever, what would you do?
If you had a sore throat, you got it swabbed with kerosene.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Swabbed with turpentine.
Oh. When I was born in 1911, a doctor lived about 12 miles down toward Butler, and he came and he had a new Model T Ford, and that was the first one they'd ever seen, you know. he'd got it, and everybody was, of course I didn't see it, but he delivered me, and I think that was the first one of the children that had a doctor. The rest of them just had midwives. What was that doctor's name that lived down by Butler? I can't think of it. Basinger, Dr. Basinger.
Do you remember any sort of, in the 30s, assistance programs from the government? Being involved in any of these sorts of things? Or hearing about them?
WPA was here because Dad would say that he couldn't get on WPA.
Yeah, why not?
Well, he just didn't.
Not enough.
Just didn't get a job.
Yeah.
Somebody.
And a lot of, they were talking about the hides.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, there were a bounty on like coyote ears, and then they shipped the hides like skunk and coon and possum. They were shipped. They skin them and stretch them and ship them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the ways that they made what money they needed.
They had boards that they put them on, you know, to stretch them. And then they'd take them off and put them in sacks to mail.
Hmm.
And
What did they do for the old folks' home? How did they take care of the old people?
They didn't take care of them. You took care of them yourself.
You know, we're getting bobcats now. Mm-hmm. They call them panthers, you know. Yeah. They're beginning to come into our country. We had a cousin come up the other night, and he said that he went out on the road, and he said he wouldn't have believed it. He lived in Arapaho. And my son had seen one on our farm.
Yeah.
And before. And they're huge. And he said he got out his binoculars, and he said it just sat and looked at him. Have you all seen any bobcats up here? Uh-huh. And they're beginning to get in the country. They're turning them loose, so they will. I don't know why they want things like that in the country, because they kill baby calves. And this one man said that they killed a baby calf for him, and they ate half of it, and then they dug a hole and left the other half and covered it, and he found the dead half calf. And they'd killed two or three for him, and now we're going to have to watch out for them. And,
you had a story over here you wanted to tell.
I forgot about it, I guess.
On how old people was cared for.
What? I don't remember now.
Thank you. I guess. When they took care of the old people?
Oh, at Tologa. They took care of them, and they called it the poor man's farm.
Yeah.
And they just had an old shed of a house. And in that old shed of a house, they had, I called them big old oil tanks.
Yeah.
For the people to use for toilets. But I can remember that.
If your family didn't take care of you when you're old, you went to
no.
Okay.
Do you remember Red Buck, the stories about Red Buck in Oklahoma? You never did?
Red Buck.
Red Buck, R-E-D, capital B-U-C-K. He was an outlaw. And, he went all over this country. They searched and searched. And one night, they were all up to my grandmother's and Uncle Dick's and Dad and all of them. They were having a party out in the yard. And one of the men there raised beautiful horses, Tom Crowder. And all of them had horses, but the rattlesnakes were so bad that all of them wore shotguns. Six shooters. The rattlesnakes were just all over this country, and I'm afraid they're going to start again because they're beginning to kill them now. We went one time 10 miles where there used to be a house every half mile or a mile at least, and we drove 10 miles, and there was not one house, anyone living in that area. And then we got to the corner there. There wasn't anyone living there. There had been a couple, and they had moved away. And then we went on south about 6 miles, and there were two houses in all of that distance. But Red Buck was an outlaw, and I suppose everybody had heard about him. He had a family across the river that he stayed with some. Do you remember their names?
I sure do.
What was it?
Dan Wise.
Well, anyway, he stopped, and they had shot one of the horses that the men were riding, and they were two riding one horse. And so they saw the lights, and they were out in the yard and having the party, and they was going. And they asked if they wanted to buy a horse. And none of them wanted to sell their horses. They liked them. And especially he wanted this one of Tom Crowder's because he always drew raised beautiful horses. But he told him no. And they all had their six shooters because my dad said he had seen a rattlesnake bite a horse. And he said that horse didn't get a quarter of a mile till it fell down dead. Yeah, those rattlesnakes had so much venom in them. Mm-hmm. And they were just everywhere when the pioneers first come here. Mm-hmm. and they got them about all killed out. And we still have prairie snakes, you know, understand. But anyway, Redbutt finally decided that he wasn't any of them going to sell him a horse. So he said he'd go on across the river to those people that he stayed with some, and he thought maybe he could get a horse over there. But they said he was buried at Arapaho. They killed him out west of Arapaho in a dugout. He started to come out of the dugout, and they shot him.
He was killed right over southwest of our place, over the web.
Oh, he was killed?
And he stopped there and talked to my dad. At the wagon.
Well, in the historical book, they said he was killed west of Arapaho.
But that's where he was.
He was buried at Arapaho, and they talked about taking up his body and using DNA to see if it was really him. Some of them said he went to Texas and got away, and nobody ever knew him. But anyway, when the sheriff at Custer County killed him. Ventioner, Ventioner.
And Ernie Ventioner at Webb killed him.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Ernie Ventioner.
Oh, well, this was Ventioner that killed him, but the historical book says west of Arapaho. Yeah. And that's where he was with some other people. He had another man in the, a miller with him that was from Custer. And they shot off Miller's hand, but they didn't kill him. They took him. I've forgotten what the miller's name was.
That family was neighbors to my grandparents up there. And he came to see their daughter. They had a double-walled house. And if anybody came around, they'd put him between the walls. But it was, my grandmother said it was not uncommon when the horses in the lot at night for the next morning to have different horses. Because he would leave his horses and take their fresh horses.
And their name was Dan Wise?
Dan Wise. Mm-hmm.
How did you spell that?
Look in the historic, you've got a historical book over there, and check it.
There's lots of excitement going on over right here.
Yeah. I was just a baby.
What was Red Buck known for? Did he rob banks?
He was an outlaw, everything. He killed people and robbed them and just take horses and stole.
I don't know where he originally came from.
He stole from the rich and gave to the poor. So that's what he did. Yeah.
Do you believe he did that?
I know he did that. Or my folks did.
What stories did they tell about him?
Just what she's telling you, what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
She's forgot a lot of it, but that's stuff that they told.
Did you all get any money from him, or do you remember stories about getting money from him?
No, but like the horses.
Yeah.
My grandmother would always say they were at least as good or better horses than what they took.
Yeah.
They were just tired.
I was little. I can't remember much of it, but I know he come through there, and the folks made us go in the house, and they talked to him out by the well where he watered his horses, and he said they were after him then. So they moved on over by the Perigord place and the Lovinchener place. And that's where they had their shootout. That was west of our homestead over the way.
Who was it they killed over there in that schoolhouse one time? They had a fight there. A couple of people, I can't remember what their names were, but it wasn't Redback. So
was he respected in the area, or was he considered to
by some people, but a lot of people didn't?
Yeah. In the eastern part of Oklahoma, they have Pretty Boy Floyd, who played the same role.
Yeah.
They're having something at...
There is a little book of Red Buck. that's in this area. Is it up? Have you looked up at the jailhouse, Pauline?
I don't know.
That's quite a little story. Huh?
There's one at the library at
Well, Seaman. He is buried in Arapahoe Cemetery. They have his name up there. They're having something right away at Clinton, and half the story is going to be on stories about Red Buck. I thought about writing and sending in this one where he stopped at the folks' house, but I didn't.
you guys should write in something
about your story's not
really. Oh, he was well known everywhere he traveled the country, everywhere. And when he needed a horse, he'd try to buy one from somebody, you know. And he almost got killed a number of times, but he got away.
Well,
you have a historical book, and so you can get the Dewey County. I imagine it's in the first one.
I'll check it out.
But you got one and two both over there, haven't you, Stillwater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My niece lives in Houston. I was never so shocked, and she said she went up to the library, and there was a two Dewey County historical books. We still have money in our historical fund from selling those books.
That's good.
Oh, we sold an enormous amount. They called it Spanning the River. And this river over here, it didn't have a bridge on it, the South Canadian. And it was very, this quicksand was bad. You could get out in the middle of it and a horse had bogged down and you couldn't get it out without a lot of help. And it'd go clear down to as far as its body and then even sink on out of sight. And that river, it now has nothing but weeds and a little stream out in the middle. But we lived on the Livermore Ranch, and we could see the river. And one morning, my husband was milking, and he came running up to the house, and he said, "Come here." And the river was coming down. When it came down, it was huge, and it was about this high and just clear across the whole thing. It wasn't just... partly, you know, it just the width of the river, and it would wash out the railroad bridge. They didn't have a bridge. They had a ferry at Camargo, and you could cross, get on that ferry and cross if you had to go across the river. And the rest of them, once in a while, they'd try to go, you know, just through the quicksand. They had a little trail.
Well, they had the Indian Ford.
Yeah.
And the Farmer Ford.
Uh-huh.
That they had. But by way
of. They were not either one of them bridges. And the first bridges they ever built was at Camargo, and then they built one at Tologa. We have one there talking about putting in a new one now. But that was why we named the historical book Spanning the River, because it was a real handicap for the people on the north side of the river and the south side.
What's the Indian Ford and the Farmer Ford? Just places to cross the river?
Yeah. Different places.
The Farmer Ford was McGettrick Ford.
Yeah.
And it came off of the end of their homestead farm on the north side of the river.
Okay.
Mother there is, Miss Collier made up a map, and if you can find it of Dewey County, you'll find that ford on that map.
It's Livermore Ranch that we lived on for 4 years. A lady in Chicago, a teacher in Chicago, had her dad and his wife, and they called him Colonel, and they said he rode around on a great big tall horse and held his head high and he wouldn't have anything to do with any of the neighbors. And they called him, he said he was a colonel in the Civil War. So Miss Livermore, she wasn't married, she intended to make a dude ranch out of it. And she had a man build a barn up there where we lived, but that's where we got there. And it had big wings on the side of it. And she said that when they came up from the river on horses, they could stand under there and be cool. And she was going to fix it. Well, she became ill. And she had a real good friend that was a nurse. She taught school in Chicago and thought she had retired at teacher's retirement. Teacher's money to pay for things. And come to find out, she didn't.
So she gave this ranch to a nurse and that would take care of her until she passed away. And so the nurse had it 2 years, and then we bought it, and we still own it. And that's the place that my son, this spring, he leased out days, and he had a trailer house up there where we lived when we, before we went to the nursing home. And he would let them stay all night in the trailer, those people that came from Oklahoma City and Elk City and yeah. Clinton and everywhere. And they killed 41 deer. And, of course, they just have a certain season they can kill them, you know. But it was just in the spring of the year when they were beginning to come out of the river. They stay in the river a lot in the wintertime. And the river is just full of weeds and trees and bushes. And it has a place in it now. They put dams in, 3 or 4 dams in it above, and so there's no water hardly at all comes down it anymore. But the kids would get out in that river when those it was that high, and it was swift. And when it washed out the railroad bridge, they would get those piles and get them on the, take them out to the land and then sell them for posts. But it was dangerous. It was really dangerous. That river was swift.
Well, to sort of back up to something you mentioned earlier about your dad trying to get work with the WPA, what was the general feeling towards Roosevelt and the New Deal in this
Extremely
area?
Good. Extremely good. We, in 41, we married in 37, and in 1941, Roosevelt loaned money to buy 320 acres of land and build a house. And so we went into the program. They chose 10 from Dewey County, and we were one of the 10. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any electricity, so they brought all of the company from Oklahoma City that built it. But they brought all of the wood pre-sawed, and then they had a gasoline sander. Nobody had ever seen floor sanded before, and they were so surprised. And we built the bungalow, and we had a front porch, and a living room, and a dining room, and a kitchen, and 2 bedrooms in the house. And then later on, we added a big den on the south, and then we turned it into a room for the washer and just odds and ends, and where I made a deal, and you would love to see them. There were 8 in our family, and all of them, one of them's a lawyer, and they run banks and do this, and I made a book for every one of them, and every time anything come out in the paper about any of them or the kids, I put it in those books. And when we have family reunions, I ordered the plastic sheets from California, and they don't let anything fade for 100 years. And so none of the some of the things that I had kept before turned yellow out of the newspapers. Mm-hmm. But I made one, and I take them to the reunion, and they all begin to grab to see what's in them about them this time.
Do you think that your dad had a positive or negative view of FDR?
Yes, my dad had a positive view. Roosevelt's New Deal is what brought them out of the 30s and depressions, and the livestock was worthless, and they had no place to go with them. They couldn't feed them. As your livestock produces, if you don't move it off, pretty soon you have overpopulation, and that's what they got to. And they couldn't sell them, and they couldn't feed them, but they still were producing. So in Roosevelt's New Deal, he came out, he killed the livestock and buried them and paid the farm people for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that eventually brought them out of depression and started them out. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anyone in this livestock killing program, anyone who thought that that wasn't a good idea?
Oh, they were happy to have it.
Yeah.
It was the first opportunity, that people had to even try to get out of the depression. What, didn't you all think so? You know, they hired the people to work for WPA, and then they loaned this money. We were the first ones in the county to pay back all of our loan.
Was this when they took the cows over the hill and killed them? Mm-hmm. I can remember Mom saying that when they got rid of the cows, the animals, they took them over the cliff and shot them and killed them, and it was heartbreaking.
I could see how people, even though they thought that, you know, financially this is a good thing to do, they could still be, you know, bothered by attached to their animals and caring for them.
Most people just had about every quarter section, or some 80s in this county, had homesteads on. People lived there. And they all had milk cows, and those milk cows reproduced calves, you know, and they could not sell them.
Right.
So they just, pretty soon they were overpopulated. They had nothing for them to eat. My dad's horses that he farmed with, and a lot of the time he would put them in a section line so they would have something to eat so he could farm with them.
Bull Spot started coming through. That was a milk company, and they bought the milk. And my husband would get up at 4 o'clock and milk 10 cows and set the milk out for them to come in. And then he'd come in, start breakfast, and wake me up, and I'd get the kids up. And I taught school 34 years, and I'd get the kids ready to go to school, and then I'd get ready to go to school. Yeah. We'd all take off, and he'd go to the field. And I said to him, why don't you go over to the cafe at Putnam and eat dinner and not have to. He said, well, I can come in and cook. He always cooked for his mother anyway. He cooked at home. And he said his brother couldn't even boil water without burning it. But he said, I can come in and cook me some dinner and get back in the field before I could get my order in over Putnam. But he worked hard all of his life. He could pick more cotton than anybody in the country. But there was a minister, Polly Bowser, and he didn't get his story in that last, in any either one of those books. And he went everywhere preaching, you know, and I don't know how many funerals. I bet that man, preacher didn't know he lived over by Lido, which was a little store about 3 miles west of Burma where we lived. And he could pull more broom corn than Carol. Carol said he'd just work his head off trying to beat him, but he could always beat him pulling broom corn. But Carol could pick 1,000, and that was picked, and he picked 1,000 pounds. You know, now they bowl it. Or, well, they have a, you don't do any of that work anymore. If kids had to work like we did, then have a running fit.
Well, what would each of you say, and each of you have a chance, and we'll start at the end and go down. What, when you think about the Dust Bowl in the early 30s, what is the first thing that comes to mind? What's your most vivid mental picture about that time?
I really don't remember any of the Dust Bowl except what my parents talked about. But the chickens going to roost, the sheets over the windows. In the 50s, we had some dust, but I'm satisfied it wasn't anything like the 30s. But those were the problems that they had.
How about for you? When you think about that time, what is the...
I don't want to.
Try not to.
I don't try. Well, when I got away from it, I said I never wanted to see it again or hear it.
What about the cactus that grew?
I know.
Out south of Mom's house, at Mom and Dad's house, there was a prairie hill. And she said that nothing would grow there except just the cactus. And they raked the cactus.
The old big cactus, prickly pears. And they just bunches of them. There was nothing there but them.
That was a result of overgrazing.
Yeah.
And when they had that overpopulation of livestock, they burnt the spines off those cactus and fed them to the livestock.
Yeah.
Have something to eat.
How about you?
I guess just the dirty 30s.
Yeah.
It was 30. I didn't have the responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't old enough to. Like some of these others did.
had to go through that, raising family and all.
Even it was rough. Even as a small child, that seeing something like that, it's pretty, pretty incredible.
Yes. He remembered.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Permanently there. Mm-hmm. And finally.
Oh, I just remember everything you touched was gritty and dirty and just, just hated to touch anything. You'd clean it up and in just a little while it'd be the same thing again. And, of course, you know, when you whisked it with a broom, it just flew everywhere. And it was in outside, and people would even get stuck in cars. It'd be drifted in the roads. And they'd even get stuck in their cars and have to get out and push and to get them out.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, it was awful.
Do you have any other questions you want to ask?
I'm satisfied.
I want to tell about my grandfather, Burton. He was a Baptist minister, and this is related to the river. And on, like, a Saturday evening, my grandmother would fix his clothes all for him, and he would ride his horse across the river. Well, sometimes the water was so deep that he had to put his Bible in his hat.
Oh,
and then ride the horse across to this side where he preached between here and Tologa. His name is William Curtis Burton. And he was born in 1876, and he made the run. And they lived on this land that is still in the family.
You know, the later days, they didn't make the run. They just filed on the land, and you had to live on 5 years. But they didn't make the run. That's when my uncle came, and the people that lived on the land hadn't made the run. They just filed, and then they had to live there 5 years. But you could buy a relinquishment from them, from whoever, if they wanted to leave. And then you could, but you had to live there then 5 years and own it. And,
Mom's mother and Dad's families both worked on the railroad as it came down across Kansas. And that's when they heard of the run, so they came down and made their run.
So the Katy Railroad? What railroad?
It was the main line that came down, you know, when for the cattle drive and stuff, when they built down across Kansas. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
But they came down, and my grandmother and grandfather homesteaded on adjoining quarters, and they built their cabin on the line. And then they brought with them a school teacher since they had 11 kids. Homesteaded. And then my grandmother's dad homesteaded a quarter also. So they had 5 quarters where they homesteaded. But they lost all of those in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Due to, had a mortgage on it? And
mortgages or whatever, they just couldn't pay the taxes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of land right here in this area. At one time, it was taken over for taxes.
So, okay.
But you said she's on a Centennial farm right now, is that?
That's on my dad's side.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mother lived.
He was a half-breed Cherokee, and he was here somewhere in the 1880s before there was ever a run. So he just stayed.
Huh.
And then he finally proved his up.
Yeah.
Mother's family lived across the river west by Lenore and Webb.
Yeah.
And then Daddy's family lived where Mother is still living today.
And
I've heard her tell about forging the river. She and Minnie would forge the river to come across to see Daddy and back.
Especially the dance to Fletcher's Lake.
Mm-hmm. How would you keep from getting wet to go to the dance?
Well,
did you bring out other clothes to?
We had other clothes, and we had a sister that lived on the other side of the river and a family, her family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where we'd stay all night when we'd come in from the dance.
That sister lived close to the south end of the McGettrick Ford.
Yeah.
Okay.
My mother came from Illinois, and her mother's sister was married to a shepherd, and the Shepherds and the Miracles, M-E-R-I-C-A-L, they came from up there to Crawford, Texas. and they were on the road in covered wagons for 6 months. And they lived down there about 10 years, and then they came to Paul's Valley. And one of the shepherds bought some land there, and they happened to strike oil on it. But none of the rest of them were that fortunate. So when the land in Custer County, when they began to let them file on it, well, all of the miracles came to Custer County, and every one of them filed on land. And my grandmother and her son, well, they had one son, and he was a rover. He couldn't stay anywhere very long, so he bought a cotton gin for my two uncles, and he took it to Old Mexico. And when they got down to Old Mexico, he wrote one Grandma and Uncle Charles to come, and they went too. They sold their land. And when they got down there, then they hadn't been there but about a year, and they had that Mexican Revolution, and they got out with nothing. They were glad to just get out with their lives. And they came, Grandma and Uncle Charles came back to Oklahoma, and they didn't have any land, nothing to live on, so we had bought, I told you, the place that had the orchard. And so Dad let them have the house there. It was a big two-story house. And he wanted Mother to move over there. And she said, heaven and no, I don't want these kids running up and down the stairs all day. So he let Grandma and them, and he gave Uncle Charles a team of horses and let him use his plows and things, you know, to farm with, so he'd have a way to make a living. And but people managed in those days.
One way or the other.
They survived anyhow. Yeah, they were survivors.
Yeah. My dad had an uncle that went he had borrowed a bunch of money. He ran a store at Burma, and he had borrowed a bunch of money, and he went to Montana without paying it back. And so my dad and uncle paid him off. It was their half-brother. And they paid him off. And that just irked Mother to death until her grandmother and her mother came back. And Dad let them have the horses and the land there at the farm. Then she didn't complain so much anymore. But when my nephew went to Thomas, he's a lawyer, and everybody in the country knew my dad. They came and tried to get him to run for commissioner, and he told them, no, politics and religion didn't mix. And he was superintendent of church for 15 years and taught Sunday school classes. And when C.B. went to Thomas one day to be a lawyer, he lives in Clinton, and one of the men down there said, I heard that you are Charlie Grass' grandson. And C.B. said, yeah, but I didn't get to know him. And he said, well, if you were just half as big as he was, you'd be a giant. And then my son carried the mail down there, and when he went down, and this same man said, I hear you're Charlie Grass' grandson. And he said, yeah. And he said, well, he said his word was his bond. He said, if he told you something, you believed it.
Well, I think that's all the questions we have for you guys. Well, thanks for coming in and talking with us.
It was interesting.